Welcome.
Krav Maga is Israeli martial art. It is a martial art. No matter what nobody tell you, it is a martial art. It's just more martial, less art.
Thank you guys so much for your attention.
So if you're a kindergarten, you need to see these positive images, and you need to see the beauty of your heritage in a way that will spark you to feel a sense of pride.
Soul Fire Farm is just really at the vanguard of thinking about racism in our current food system and how we have to shatter that together.
Backwards. Come on, move! I'm the head instructor and owner of Krav Maga CDK.
Gotta be an example. Be by example.
Get enough rest in the afterlife.
Krav Maga is Israeli martial art. It is a martial art. No matter what nobody tell you, it is a martial art. It's just more martial, less art. The skinny of it is a guy, Emi. And Emi, I think he was actually Hungarian. But once he deployed during the Nazi regime, he went to Israel. And Israel employed him to teach their troops. So he was a boxer and a wrestler, legend has it. But he was a good fighter.
Hish.
Now, I could do it with a clinch to make it even more powerful. It's based off of what would normally be instinctive movements, things you would do anyway in a stressful situation. So if somebody were to throw something at you and you go, oh, right? So he said, okay, well, that's what people do. So let's just make that into a defense. So if that's your defense, it's easy to recall as opposed to doing all this other crazy stuff. That's good, but if you can't do it in stress, then it doesn't make a difference. And boom, I'm poking him. Boom, with my front foot. Make sense? The power comes from that hip.
Peace.
Good. So martial, by definition, means war. That's what martial means. And the art is a method of way, how you express yourself. Some people express themselves. You have paintings. That's an art. You know, they express themselves through painting. You have singing. That's an art. Acting. That's an art. When you go up, you're going to twist left. Twist right, go back down. I am the first African American to get his black belt. Move! Move! So you're just in a de-escalator, you can be using your voice. Hey, listen, man, back up, you know, whatever. You know, boom, okay? So that makes me feel good. But the reason why it makes me feel good, because I like to inspire. All right, let's play. Let's go! Bottom squat position. Hold that position and count to 20. Go. It's a book by Tim Larkin called When Violence is the Answer. And he starts the book off and he says, violence is rarely the answer, but when it's the answer, it's the only answer. You know, so when a bad person is using violence against a good person, that's a bad act he's doing. But when a good person is using violence to defend him or herself, that's a good thing.
I took karate in high school, but then just never came back to it. And about 4 years ago, the country seemed to be getting a little rough. And I thought, well, you know, if there are people out jumping other people in the streets, harassing other people in the streets, I want to be able to do something. And, you know, I'm not a martial artist. I mean, I'm not on, you know, some journey towards, you know, being Bruce Lee or whatever the 52-year-old female equivalent of that is. And Krav Maga is a system that anyone can do, you know. It's not pretty, but, you know, you can learn something in a single seminar that might just be the thing that saves your life. And the longer you stick with it, the more you're able to address whatever risks come your way.
Go!
I first heard about it from a friend of mine, but I had actually been thinking about, you know, some sort of martial arts because I'm in the security field and I'm wanting to go further into that. So came to try this out ended up loving it.
People walk around the streets or wherever they are, you know, if they have confidence, if they know that they can defend themselves if they had to, I found that people are a lot nicer. I kind of call myself saving the world one punch at a time through the teachings of self-defense. That's my mantra.
Carter G. Woodson, he was born in 1875, and he actually passed away in 1950. But during his time, he completely devoted himself to studying Black history and making sure that the world would have this information.
Imagine having Alzheimer's disease or having a hard time seeing and hearing. These age-related health challenges can now be experienced through virtual reality or VR.
It's part of our own future of aging. So if we can see ourselves in older people that might have these slight changes, just a matter of patience and knowledge could help reduce the stress and stigma of that disease.
Carrie Shaw founded Embodied Labs, a company that immerses a user into the world of the elderly to better understand their reality. The experiences include hearing the confusion related to memory loss from Alzheimer's.
What was I looking for?
To visual impairment. Shaw's mother suffered from Alzheimer's disease. She realized even professional caregivers found it challenging interacting with her mother.
Some would treat her like a child, and she would sense that and, you know, she would kind of push back and say, I don't want to be talked down to like I'm a child.
The company offers the software and hardware needed for the VR experience to help users develop empathy.
Today we use a live-action film that's also blended into a game engine so it becomes interactive.
Jamie Hannons uses Embodied Labs to train nursing students. She says this VR experience with macular degeneration opened her eyes.
When you're in the headset, looking kind of to the side to view what's going on. I saw that tilt and I thought, I've seen that with patients so many times and not recognized it as an opportunity to say, how's your vision?
For now, Embodied Labs only sells to services for the aging because Shaw says it's important that VR is paired with a guided discussion and reflection.
I am your brain.
To process what the users experienced so they know how to put into action what they've learned. Elizabeth Lee, VOA News, Los Angeles.
Okay, awesome. Well, thank you guys so much. It's going to be so much fun. I want you guys to just really get comfortable, enjoy all the activities, get to know each other, but I want you to just be relaxed and to have fun, okay? My name is Tiffany Lane, and I'm the founder of Bevy and Dave. It used to be an educational toy company, but now we've expanded, and now it's multimedia educational company. First, we're going to watch the very first Bevy and Dave film.
So let's make a joyful noise as we celebrate your brilliance, celebrate your greatness inside.
Carter G. Woodson, he was born in 1875, and he actually passed away in 1950. But during his time, he completely devoted himself to studying Black history and making sure that the world would have this information.
Never forget Dr. Carter G. Woodson.
So he's very devoted to that cause, and so that's why he created Black History Week back in 1926. It was the first week, and then it expanded to Black History Month in 1976.
We're on Knife Street, Northwest in Washington, D.C. Ah, there it is.
So cool. I can't wait to meet Dr. Woodson.
Me too.
This building was best known as Dr. Woodson's office home. It's here that Dr. Woodson took on the heavy task of researching, recording, and publishing Black history.
It wasn't just about publishing and getting the books out there. He literally went straight to the teachers, and he would make books for them to use in the classroom to teach the children. And he would have questions at the end to make sure they understood the lesson. And he also created other things, like the Negro History Bulletin that would go out once a month to teachers for people to have to learn more detail about what they didn't know. And so what I loved about him, he was not only brave and courageous, but he understood that it took just one person to make a difference.
Good afternoon, Dr. Woodson.
Hello, Mrs. Terrell.
Mary Church Terrell was an educator, activist, and the co-founder of the National Association of Colored Women. Their slogan was, "Lifting as we climb."
He made Black history a collective effort where all the history was now put together in a way for people to consume it, to learn it, and have an opportunity to learn more about the work of many Black people, not just one here or there, which is what was available at the time. Some people ask, well, why Dr. Carter G. Woodson, why him first? Because he's my personal inspiration. His mission was to save and publish Black history, and my mission is very similar. The difference is that I'm not just using books like he did. I'm using toys, I'm using film, I'm using games, and any other medium that can get children to learn in a fun way. I enjoy doing presentations. So when I'm preparing for presentations, I do a few things. Obviously, I'm packing what needs to go, the books, the toys, whatever needs to be, the film. But I also put the art and craft package together so that children can have the opportunity to be even more creative with the work, so they can write down what they're learning, so they can expand upon their ideas. Okay, so you can sit anywhere you want.
Between 1920 and 1960, this area was home to Black leaders in the arts, science, the military, and many more.
When a young child is learning Black history, they need to learn things that are age appropriate. So clearly, if you're really young, you really don't need to learn about things that can be violent, but you can learn about things that are going to help you achieve more. So if you're a kindergarten, right, if you're age 5, you need to see these positive images, and you need to see the beauty of your heritage in a way that will spark you to feel a sense of pride. Thank you guys so much for your attention. So I'm going to ask you a couple of questions now. So first question is, who did you meet in the film? Did you meet anybody in the film that you didn't know about before? And as the child gets a little older, then they can start learning about the other things, right? Because now their mind can understand it more.
That is the Howard Theater, built in 1910. One can see a play, a musical performance, or even a vaudeville show there.
Children love to watch films. They love visual stories. And so we have to diversify how children learn so we can really get the message to sink in. Because the key that I've learned about children is you have to repetitively give them the information.
Why did I start preserving Negro history? Well, I received my doctorate degree in history from Harvard University in 1912. And it was there that I was truly set upon my path. One of my professors, Edward Channing, told my class that the Negro had no history. I challenged him, arguing that no people lacked history.
What did he say?
He told me to prove him wrong, and so I have.
I would like to share a quote by Dr. Carter G. Woodson that, to me, speaks a lot to his personality. He has many quotes, but this one is it speaks to his personality, but it shares to the work that he did and what I'm doing. Real education means to inspire people to live more abundantly, to learn to begin with life as they find it, and to make it better. That quote is very powerful because what it's saying is that no matter where you are in life,
no matter how your life begins, you have the power to change it and change the world.
You must honor your life by being your best self. How you live your life is your legacy in the making. And just understand, like, it's okay to not be perfect. Nobody's perfect. It's best just to just be your what?
Self.
Best what?
Self.
Exactly. Best self. Thank you guys so much. You can take puzzles if you want home. Thank you so much for being here.
We are part of a returning generation of black and brown farmers whose grandparents and great-grandparents fled the red clays of the South to escape oppression. And we're realizing that something was left behind in the Great Migration. And that was a bit of our culture, a bit of our souls, a bit of our connection to our ancestors and the sacred earth.
When all the other workers have left, this robot gets busy cleaning hospital rooms. It is disinfecting using a form of ultraviolet light called UVC.
UVC light in particular is the optimal germicidal wavelength to deactivate bacteria, fungus, and viruses. And it does it either on surfaces or whether they're in the air. So the robot was originally designed for hospital use to reduce hospital-acquired infections, which is a major problem in every health system globally, and it's very effective at doing that.
The robot is first trained on where to go and how long to stay there. After that, it can perform the same task autonomously.
Since COVID-19, all of a sudden, we were inundated with interest in the technology in a number of different sectors.
UV robots are now at work in hotels, offices, and airports around the world. For safety, people must leave the area or wear protective gear.
All forms of UV light are known to be harmful to the skin and to the eyes. And so it's very important that people exit the room or the space before the lamps come on.
Light-sensitive stickers can be used to determine how well the robot has performed.
And we know exactly for each bacteria or for each virus exactly what energy level is required to deactivate it. We'll be able to see exactly what disinfection is happening, give reassurance and confidence that the disinfection is a sufficient level to deactivate what needs to be done.
Manual cleaning of high-touch surfaces is still recommended by experts. But the robots are adding another line of defense in the war against deadly microbes. Matt Dibble for VOA News.
We are part of a returning generation of black and brown farmers whose grandparents and great-grandparents fled the red clays of the South to escape oppression. And we're realizing that something was left behind in the Great Migration. And that was a bit of our culture, a bit of our souls, a bit of our connection to our ancestors and the sacred earth.
Another worm.
Oh, Mom, there's three left.
Oh, okay.
This one looks a little healthier, though. Maybe I'll switch it out.
It's a little sickly little thing. I'm in favor of sickly little things. It'll grow. It just needs soil.
My name is Leah Penniman, and I'm the founding co-director at Soulfire Farm in Grafton, New York. So there's eight of us who live here in season. My family, including my partner Jonah and our two teenage children, Nishima and Emmett, are here all year round in this beautiful straw bale timber frame home that we built from hand. And additionally, members of our farm team live with us from the spring through the late fall.
Because I've grown up with farming, I never think that it's something people are really interested in. It's like, oh, that's just how you get your food. But then, like, hundreds and hundreds of people come to every single event, and it's like, whoa! Like, my mom is has created something that people really want to learn about and be part of, and that's amazing to me.
Soulfire Farm is a Black, Indigenous, people of color-led community farm, and we're dedicated to ending racism and injustice in the food system. We do that in three basic ways. We grow a whole lot of vegetables, herbs, fruits, eggs, and pastured poultry, which we distribute at low prices to people who need it most in the communities of Albany and Troy. The second way is by educating about 1,000 new farmers from Black, Latinx, and Indigenous communities across the country who come for week-long residential courses in sustainable agriculture. And the third and final way is that we organize very actively for fair laws that support farm workers, farmers of color, and consumers in the food system.
I've been coming to Soulfire since 2017. This place has really helped me to sort of find myself in the land and to come to understand all of the things that I can bring to this movement and to our people and back to the earth.
Good morning. Bienvenidos a Soulfire Farm. We're dedicated to ending racism in the food system and healing lands and our relationship with land. And part of that is being in a learning community where we deepen our understanding of how animals like chickens can be part of an ecosystem and also how they can feed the community and especially feed people who otherwise would not have access to that delicious, vital food. I'm so excited to be here with all of you for this workshop on chickens. Most of the participants who are here for today's pastured poultry class are farm workers from Hurley, New York. Now we want to introduce ourselves.
Mi nombre es Victoria. Me he criado pero puro pollo de rancho. Pues aquí vengo para aprender de pollo orgánico.
Mi nombre es Víctor. Yo y ella tenemos planes ahora de irnos para México y es lo que nosotros queremos poner un negocio así para dar un poco barato y ayudar un poco a las personas.
It's a little known fact that about 85% of the people who do farm labor in this country speak Spanish as their first language. So if we say we're for food justice and liberation, it would be very disingenuous to only offer programming in English that excluded most of the farmers in this nation. And there's been a lot of excitement, particularly from the Latinx farm worker community in our area, to learn these skills so that when they do have their own farms and are no longer working for wages on other people's farms, they can implement these integrated livestock and vegetable systems. And then we're going to walk around and meet the chickens on the farm and see how we take care of them, how we know if they're sick, what kind of houses they need. And then after lunch, we'll actually take 5 chickens and we'll process them for meat. If you include all of our on-farm and off-farm programs, we reach over 7,000 people a year, of which around 2,000 actually come to the farm. And we learned everything from seed to harvest, as well as the history of Black, Indigenous farming and land-based movements, and do a lot of work to heal from the trauma of slavery and sharecropping and the Bracero program and other types of land-based oppression that seek to really separate us from a healed and dignified relationship with land. We call these shelters chicken tractors. I wanted to be able to move it by myself without a tractor, because for the first few years of the farm, I was managing the farm and I didn't have any staff or partners in the farm. So I had to think about systems that I could do on my own. We also don't want the meat to be so tough that our customers don't know how to prepare and eat it. So keeping them in a smaller space that moves every day or every other day means they still get the benefit of pasture, but they're not getting so much exercise that their muscles become very tough.
Entonces, criarlos así, como en jaulitas, es mejor para la carne, es más suave, o sea, se cocina más pronto. Entonces, ahora vengo a entender por qué las gallinas de mi abuelita estaban tan duras.
You can give a little push and help her. You're doing perfectly, you're very strong.
So
Soulfire Farm is just really at the vanguard of thinking about racism in our current food system and how we have to shatter that together. And so I've wanted to come and learn through that lens for a really long time. So this was the perfect opportunity.
Bienvenido. Ya, ni modo. El adiós del amiguito pollito.
I believe so passionately that we all have the right to have dignity and belonging as it relates to the earth and to have agency in the food system. And there's just been a whole history of dispossession and discrimination against certain people as it relates to land and food. So a big part of teaching is about empowering our people and equipping our people with the skills to take back that dignified relationship with land.
We remove the feathers on the side of the neck that we're going to be cutting from. And I cut cross body, so I don't cut this way. I actually come over here. That's what I find most comfortable. Because I'm right-handed, I'm going to remove the feathers from the left side. Okay, so I want to remove enough feathers so that I can see what I'm doing.
So I'm left-handed.
Right, so yeah, so since you're left-handed, you would do it on the opposite side.
Yep.
So the bird is now considered dead.
We want to build up a generation of people who believe that they matter and that they're connected to something bigger than what capitalism would have them believe.
I was just taken aback by how warm the bodies of these animals were. And learning about the different aspects of pastured poultry really sort of has affected the way that I will be consuming poultry going forward.
So the cut I do, you go horizontal over here and then come around. Mm-hmm. Make sure to get the cloaca. But that's one thing.
Ya sé cómo criar un pollo y cómo criar huevos. Entonces, yo creo que pues eso es algo bonito para mi familia adelante, porque así ya sé cómo darles de comer a mis hijos. Y a mis hijos enseñarlos para que le den a los nietos y a futuras generaciones que vengan en camino. Y pues, ¿por qué no? A ver, también amigos vecinos, ¿va?
For many worldwide, smartphones are used for everything from financial transactions to social media. So when screens break or crack, it can feel like life itself comes to a halt. Longtime U.S. glassmaker Corny has spent more than a decade making smartphone glass stronger. That's of particular importance to growing smartphone markets such as India and China, where smartphones are an extravagant purchase for many.
These devices are typically a much higher percentage of a person's GDP in emerging regions. So durability and longevity of that phone becomes a much more critical feature than in other developed countries.
Corning, founded in 1851, has pivoted with the times. In 1879, Thomas Edison went to Corning for glass for his light bulb. Corning's glass is used in the windows for NASA space shuttles. In the 1950s, Corning became a household name with Corningware cookware, and Steve Jobs used it for the iPhone. Now Corning dominates the worldwide smartphone glass industry. Its latest product, Gorilla Glass Victus, is even tougher, says the company.
Whenever we develop a new glass, we set the bar high. The new glass must be clearly better than our current flagship product and far superior to the competition.
Corning said they were able to improve both drop and scratch performance at the same time, a first in the industry.
Gorilla Glass Victus can drop from 2 meters in height, which is taller than I am, onto a rough surface like asphalt. And it has 2x better scratch performance than our previous glass.
So the next time you drop your phone and it miraculously doesn't shatter, it's most likely thanks to this company in upstate New York. Dina Mitchell for V.